Well, it's my pleasure. I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. And it's my pleasure this morning to introduce to you a very special...
Just say hello now. Just say yes.
She's telling me, you see, I think it's something about non-alcoholics controlling. I'm not sure. I think we all know our speaker. She's come a very long way. She's come from Manhattan. She's given up her weekend to be with us throughout this study. She's been with us since Friday. And she's going to talk about a wonderful book that many of us have read. Glad to have been there.
Oh, Nell, grateful to have
grateful to have been there. Grateful, it's a better word.
We authors have to get it straight.
Right. Nell Wing.
Hi, everybody. I am so happy to be here. I'm at any place you are at, I am happy to be grateful to be. To misuse and reuse the word over again, but I think maybe there's one word that doesn't get One of my problems today meeting in this era of my life is that I'm getting very forgetful. Can't remember what I did 2 minutes ago, who I said hello to. It's really getting very bad. But anyway, I'm grateful to be here indeed. The concepts were exciting to listen to. I remember I was going over those days in 1959 when I copied and typed and retyped and retyped them. And they all rewrote and rewrote and rewrote. And it was very exciting because he was very eager to get those concepts in order and organized. And after that, he's going to retire, which he did in 62, after the concepts were accepted at the conference in 62. Took a little while for people. Nobody wanted to read or hear about, just like in the steps and the traditions. Nobody wanted the book. Nobody wanted to hear all about that, you know. It truly was several years before anybody got interested in reading and seeing what the concepts were about. The experience. Pardon me, my voice. I had a wicked fall down in San Antonio, Texas, and I fell in my throat area right onto a steel post along the riverfront, and my voice still sounds very funny. I say I always sound like Marge Simpson. Do you ever watch The Simpsons? On the when I'm talking like that, how are you, Homer? Bye, don't do that. So, God knows I may have this for the rest of my life. I don't know. Anyway, I can, when I'm normal and try to be nice and easy, and then it seems to be not too bad. But if I got started going off the deep end. But the concepts were a long time being accepted or just simply being read. And I think my recollection is that nobody, say staff members or trustees, made a big, big effort to get them familiar across the country. Eve M., one of our staff members, I remember Evie at the office, did a wonderful, well, I'll call it a talk, a dissertation, in explaining... This is what she tried to do deliberately so other people maybe might be able to get interested in reading them and knowing more about them. And I think Eve was a big help in getting the idea that it would be important to read these concepts across to the fellowship when she went out on her talking tours. So that was... but I think that they're a unique... explanation of how one can manage, of how this, particularly, of course, how this fellowship accepted, how it works, what actions it takes and that sort of thing. Very, very important. And so I hope the effort, the idea of discussing them thoroughly in group meetings and conventions and so forth, conferences, will still hold because it's very important. I wish these are little notes now I'm taking this morning's comments. I wish that there would be an update of the markings, because that's 13 years old. And just a minute. Office up at 475 Riverside Drive is unbelievable, monumentally big. And I felt like a country bumpkin going up there for the first time. Oh, God, how do we get into this? Even the ladies' room and the little little relaxation room in it was as big as the office when I first came, literally. We could put the whole office into that small thing. But the marking, I think, I'd like to see, say, statistics, maybe another updated look at the archives, because the archives today are monumental. And what I'd like to do, if you want to do it now or afterwards, these are pictures that I took of the office when I went up last. And this is a visitor's card. You have to have the visitor's card now. Get up there. You can't go up by yourself. You have to get a visitor's card downstairs on the main floor. But this gives you a little look at the building itself if you don't know exactly where it is or haven't been there. And this one is, I just bought when I was down in Dallas, Bob and Betty Smith. Just to update pictures of them. They're dear. Bob is like my brother, I swear. We just love each other. And he's a super person, just super, and so is Betty. And then these are pictures of the built new building. Now, 475, as it says here, to 475 Park Avenue, Riverside Drive. Telephone number is 870-3400. So that's a new telephone number if you want to get to that. So if you want to see these, you're most welcome to look at them whenever. So that's that. Also, I'm terribly excited, and I think, have you read Dr. Bob Smith's book, new book about his mother and father and Sue's? I gave Ozzy a copy. So if you want to ask and you want to see a copy, otherwise you write to the same company which did it, Parkside Publishing Company in Park Ridge, that did my book. And there's a telephone number. There's a, I think Bonnie has the number of a call free, charge free number to call. But Bob's book is very exciting, and I think it'd be nice. I try to give away a lot of copies of their book and get a better picture, which we don't know entirely, a good picture of Bob and Ann all through the years. And this does the trick. This gives us an idea of what they were all about, too. So that's then pass around the pictures, and then the address and telephone number, GSO, I did that. Then somebody were talking, I think it was Peter, was talking about the Irish. And we had a very early saying in the early days when I first came to the office that it doesn't, you don't have to be Irish, but it helps. I forgot. Okay, that's that. As I said about my voice, I hope it lasts. If it doesn't, I'll do hand gestures or something like that. One of the things that I like to, coming up here, Joni B., my friend down over here, and I have come up many times to the, I don't know how many times, three or four, maybe three times at least, up here. And enjoyed it each time we've come up. And Ozzy has done, and the company has done such a terrific job in putting this together, renovating it, restoring it. And we didn't. The only thing is the bar isn't put in place yet. But whether it's going to be, I don't know. And the little memorabilia about where Bill was born, back of the bar. But. Again, that's not my job to say that, but anyway, I wouldn't mind the drink, but in many ways, I have to tell you, during the 40s, if you were a young lady during the 40s and roaming around like I did around the country, teaching and being in service, and it's a wonder I didn't come into AA. I mean, it's very lucky, very lucky. However, I have a relative, a family, who whose name is Bill, and he is known in his group as Bill W., and they enjoy calling him Bill W. His father should have been in long ago, but that's not unusual. Every family has some. Nowadays, it used to be when I first came to the office, part of a new group of employees that were, the old employees left because they were dissatisfied with the new order of things. And I was kind of the first in January, in March the 3rd of 47, I was kind of the first of the new breed, the new group. And all the employees coming in had a father, a mother, a cousin, you know, somebody. They had some member of AA. In fact, we had in our shipping room a little guy who had been invited to speak on the radio or TV and said, gave away all secrets and all kinds of things and kind of let go. But it was only until, and I was so rather embarrassed and rather disappointed that I had nobody in the family, a member of the fellowship. And I heard of a wing down in Virginia. And I said, oh boy, all the wings are related, the non-Indian, non-Chinese ones, I mean. I was known in the fellowship when I worked, especially the early days, the Bill Wilson's Chinese secretary. And I didn't mind. In fact, there was a guy on our floor who a good-looking Chinese guy. And I was attracted to him, too. And he told a friend of his, if I were only Chinese, he would certainly marry me right away. so the wing business is... finally, as I say, my nephew and came into the fellowship, and very grateful for that. But I down in San Antonio back in September, where I had my fall after I got out of the hospital because I couldn't speak for a full day, which is very unusual. People wouldn't believe that at all. We went around the hill country of the San Antonio, where LBJ has this museum, a gorgeous library. Museum. And my mother was from San Antonio, and I've told all about this before, I think. And we wanted my brother and sister-in-law and I, we'd gone down because my brother was a pilot during World War II, and a squadron met once a year at some place, and this year they were meeting down in San Antonio. So after that, and after my stay in the hospital, we set out for our trip around the hill country and around the Johnson country, and where my mother, places where my mother taught school and where she lived. And it was always thought, well, the hill country is a nice name, but I think of the area here as the Bill country. And I think that is where, when you come up here, the thoughts are entirely almost on Bill's, as we were hearing this weekend, on his life, his early life, what happened. It is so many things, especially as I started to say about the trips up here over the years, came up with Bill and Lois when we had the, what the heck was it, convention up, my mind is going, up in Burlington. We came up to see that. We didn't stop here, but one of my dear friends too was Dorothy, Bill's sister, and we talked at least a long time, once a month at least on the telephone, and it was a great a sadness to hear in her later years about her loss of her memory. It isn't Alzheimer's disease, but it's simply loss of memory. I think I'm getting there too. and so I try to keep in touch with her, but she doesn't remember who I am. She doesn't know who I am. But when I've been up to see her, tried to see her in Rutland, she's up in Rutland. But she's about 94 now, And about two years younger than Bill. 95 maybe it is by now. I guess about 95. But Dorothy and her husband, of course, Leonard Strong, and Leonard was such a terrific person. He was a great asset to the early days as a trustee and as an advisor of the fellowship. And we owe a lot to Leonard's ideas and his support. And he left the trustees in 1955, and especially wasn't too interested in when we wanted to, because we were trying to change this ratio of the trustees, of the non-alcoholics, one, and change it to one of alcoholics. Bill worked on that for many years. Nobody much wanted to hear about that either. But Leonard was a terrific person. They lived down when I first came up, started going up to Bill and Lois's in 54, lived in White Plains, and we often went down to see them. They were just dear. Then they moved up to another place up further up in Vermont, and then to Brandon. And they lived in this marvelous house. It was huge. It was a huge, huge house. And the front part of the house, divided in two parts. And the front part was where the family lived, the adults lived, and dining room and their bedrooms and whatnot. Then you went down a little hall down to the back part, and that's where the children lived and had their schools and their where they played and everything. It was very English, kind of an English situation. It was very dear. Then they wanted to move and got rid of that and moved up to into Brandon Inn, which is, I don't know if you've ever been to Brandon Inn. It's a lovely, lovely hotel. And Brandon is a lovely, lovely city, town. And then they moved to a rooming house right next to the inn. And that is where, I think that's where Leonard died, and that's where Dorothy lived until she had finally to go to the hospital, to the nursing home nearby. But so they had, but they were superior people. And Bill's cousin lived up the street here, where I don't, which way is up the street? Over there. This way. I think his name was Bill, too. I remember coming up and taping him while we were up here one day. And I think he's long gone, too. And then Bill had a cousin, Howard, who lived, I don't know, I think Howard lived in Manchester. And that was a cousin. And he was in AA most of the time. Trying to say it. And he married. Howard married Ann B. And Ann and her husband DeVoe had lived in Chappaqua, and they were good friends of Bill and Lois. Ann helped Lois start Al-Anon. And I went up one weekend to Bill and Lois's. I'd go up the next week to my good friends, Ann and DeVoe. So I was away 7 days a week, a busy 7 days a week. Never got to go to my Buddhist church even during that time. But anyway, Ann was a dear person. Then DeVoe died, and she and Howard got married for a while. And then they divorced, and Ann went out to live with her daughter in California, and that ended that. But there was a lot of memories around this area, even though I hadn't been living here or been here forever, anything like that. I remember one wonderful trip about 2 or 3 years ago with Traverse Sea and an English group. Dear, dear people. Oh, they're such great fun. I came up to join them. And I had met them over in England, going over to the Bristol reunion a couple times. And they came up. We went down to Long Island and traveled around. But that Travers was an exceptional person. There's so many exceptional people in AA. If I had to list them all and tell them all, we'd be here for a week at least, right? Oh, golly. And so there was a lot, and I have to, pardon me for having to refer to my notes occasionally. I can't do it. I used to be able to write off the top of my head and whatnot, but I can't do it much anymore. And then, as I say, going back to coming to the office, and I think probably if you've read the book, which I know some of you have. You'll know that I came in 1947, and March the 3rd, rapped on the door at the 11th floor of 415 Lexington Avenue, which has been torn now. And it's a great big glitzy building, as so many are in New York, gone up. In fact, practically every place where, I don't know what will happen to 478 at any time, that's still there. But every place has been changed that we've had our offices. But anyway, on Monday morning, I went to the office, having been referred by an agency, and knocked on the door, and I was greeted by a young lady, I guess she was, in with a paper bag over her head. And I thought, gosh, this is what anonymity means. I was startled. Two little eyes peeking out from the bag. You should have been in our office in those days, honestly. You'd have... We did our own things. But I learned, of course, before too long, that Mary Lou, who this was the office princess. I mean, every office, we always have said, you know, the popular person was a princess. And that was Mary Lou. She was a dear girl, but she loved to run around. And the shipping clerk, we had 12 people, one of everybody. The shipping clerk fell in love with, well, whatever, had a crush on Mary Lou. And so he left his job down in the shipping room that had a little tiny little room, and spent most of his time at Mary Lou's desk with his feet on her desk. And we had to go. My first job was a receptionist, and so we all had to go down and do our own packing, our own books. And he was too busy. And it was right. You see, what happened was that Bill was traveling all over so much. He was trying to get ideas across, particularly those years when I came. He was trying to get desperately across the idea of the acceptance of the traditions. Nobody really wanted to hear about those. He wanted to get across the idea of a general service conference in those days. We even thought of changing the name of the foundation. I still call it the foundation when I think of it. Because foundation had a different meaning to most people than what we wanted it, you know, what it really did mean to the fellowship. And so there was a lot of concentration on what the new name ought to be. So many names. But there was a feeling that it ought not to, say something that wouldn't be, say, 3A's. For example, most people called it, not knowing any different, always called AA, AAA. There were a lot of jokes about it, about the guy somebody asked the guy at the bar why, if he had interested in joining AA, and he said, oh, AAA, he said, I often have to be towed away from the bar to be sure. That's true. Well, so there's a lot of, in the early grapevines, had a lot of funny things to say about the interpretation. As a matter of fact, Joe Hirshhorn, who was Bill's, who had worked with Bill, Bill had worked with Hirshhorn, who was became a billionaire or something like that, having a lot of interest in mines or something in Canada, and oil wells or whatever, and they were neighbors over in Greenwich, Connecticut, and saw each other a lot. And Joe Hirshhorn was always after Bill to get back into business. And Bill said, well, yes, he would sometime when, things had gotten smoothly going in the fellowship, and he would then turn to business again, and to a Wall Street and trader, as they used to call him in the early days. And so he met Joe in the airport one day, and about in the early 60s, and he said, when are you going to get rid of that AAA? and come to work with me. And Bill said, well, it'll be pretty soon, I think. But again, the AAA has gotten a lot of misinterpretation of it, whatnot. Speaking of, and I'm going all over the place, I know, which I usually do anyway. You know, if I had a story to tell, I could start out with, you know, step by step by step. And now I've got 47 years or something, whatever, 45 years of being with AA, around AA, and I've got so many stories and I get it confused. But, you know, I was talking about the people up here in the area, and one of the people that certainly is associated with this area is Ebby T, if we want to call him that. What a guy he was. His family, and you probably know probably a lot about him anyway, were lawyers, were judges. There was a judge who was in Albany, New York. He was from upstate New York. And then there was I don't know if it was father or not, but there was a mayor of Albany, was also a member of the family. And he had a lot of, and he had gone, of course, to school in Manchester, as you know, with Bill. And so there were, and of course, that was the occasion when he had heard about Bill's drinking and thought he could help him with the story of the Oxford Group, message of the Oxford Group, and which he did, of course. But Abby had played a very important role in this fellowship, and there's no way we can forget what his contribution was. I mean, it's another side of the coin, I know. But look, there are two sides to a coin, right? And Abby certainly, one where carries our interest and our gratitude. There's just no doubt about it. But I was receptionist, as I say, for the first 6 years, 7 years when I first came to the office. And Abby would come in often, sometimes drunk, sometimes sober. When he was sober, he was so much fun to talk to. He knew all the wings upstate and whatnot, and he talked about he had a lot of relatives too, and he had five brothers who were all alcoholics. His brother Tom came into AA in 1940 when he came down to this area, but he didn't live very long. He died pretty early on. And there were a couple other, I don't know what happened to all the rest of them, but they all had the problem. There's no doubt about that. But Abby was really interesting to talk with. I had to talk to a lot of people when I was receptionist because we only had, when I came, two staff members, and they were busy most of the time. So people I was chosen to talk to them, a lot of them, in those first few years. But Abby, when he was drunk, was a different character. Very irritable, very angry at Bill because he wasn't made the co-founder, and which is understandable, I guess. And if he'd stayed sober, it would have been a different story, I suppose. It's interesting how fate takes charge of these things. And but he often came in the office, not just to say hello, but he wanted, you know, a few little pennies and dimes and quarters and stuff like that. We were told not to give him any money, but we all did. If I were walking afterwards out in the street and Abby was going somewhere, then I'd slip him a dollar. And God knows that's about all I earned to begin with. Believe me. As my friend Marion, who hired me, said, she said, Nell, this is a spiritual program. I think I inquired when I was on my way to Mexico and I wanted some money, some decent salary for a temporary job it was. And Marion said, so I knew right away, wow, it's not going to get very much. So, but we didn't. And you know, it's too bad that a misinterpretation was always around about the office finances. Everybody thought we were making $1 million a day up there, and Bill was raking in the money. Actually, Bill, when he died, and when I retired, I was making more money than he did that he was earning when he died. So, So the misinterpretation, as there are about so many things, these are lots of things you can't help. People don't get the right interpretation. And I'm always trying to explain, look, this is what happened, or this is what happened, or this is what happened. But Bill really wasn't bringing in that much money. And I don't, what was I saying? Why was I talking about that starting out? But I was talking about Abby, of course. And, but Abby finally, after hanging around the streets of New York, he did have one gal, one member, Julie Reed, in Gerald, I should say Julie R. Ford, pardon me. I'm sure there's, hope there's no anybody here that's going to take notes or anything. Was like a sponsor. She had a great deal of, was a great deal of help. She was one of the first women members in the New York area. And she was very, very helpful, very caring for Abby. And so were a lot of the other people. But there came a time when one of the members in New York felt something should be done about Abby. And so it was decided to write down to Texas, San Antonio, to Icky, forgetting his last name, even the initial for the letter, and from his last name, who was one of the early members down there, and ask Icky if he would get together some people or a plan to help if we sent Abby on down. So, of course, Abby was approached, and he was, no, he didn't want to go. He was very, very feisty about it and whatnot. But he went. He got, put him on the plane, went down, and Icky met him, and he got a job with a car company, I think it was. They were making, this was in 54, fall of 54, that we sent him down. Or he was sent down, rather. And he had a slight slip, was in jail overnight. For Abby, that's a slight slip. And and then he met, Abby always said, if he had a girl and a job, he could stay sober. So he got a girl and a job. And he was sober for 6 years. Taking care of this gal who was very sick, who had a lot of problems. And he was really terrific. However, she died, and he got drunk and came back north. And Julie had died. And he had Bill and Lois. He went up, stayed with Bill and Lois for a while, then went up to his upstate to near Saratoga Springs and stayed with his cousin, or his, no, it's his, one of his brothers, Ken, and his wife. And then the emphysema started to come by 66, I guess it was, 65, 66, coming on. And he wasn't in good health at all. So Mickey and, can't think of her husband, Mac P, took him into their facility in Ballston Spa up near Saratoga Springs, where he was for about a couple of years. He was sober a couple of years before he died, but it was, he couldn't go out. He couldn't leave bed, literally. He was in very bad shape, and he died in Mickey's arms. And that was in 66. Interestingly enough, you know, Abby and Dr. Thibault and Sister Ignatia all died within a week of each other in 66. One of those coincidences. Bill got to Sister Ignatia and Abby's funeral, but he couldn't get over to Dr. Thibault's. It was just too much. I mean, they're all practically all on the same day, and he couldn't make it all. But it's one of those coincidences that you get to. But Abby had quite a story, and was part of our lives, literally, during those early years. And certainly during the lives of, he helped, I'm sure, his example. He put the example, what happens if you go back to drinking, you don't stay sober. I mean, he was an example of what was happening. And so he served a purpose in that respect, too. And that, again, that was the other side of the coin. But he made, Bill was always very grateful. Always very grateful to Abby. Two people that he always tried to invite were to the annual banquets that the intergroup put on. Always invite Abby. And when possible, he'd always ask Henrietta Seiberling, who didn't have too much, didn't like him too much anyway. Bill was always very caring for everybody, whether they liked him or not, didn't make any difference. That was part of being Bill. And so anyway, there's so many factors that just remind this area, reminds me of when I come up. So I call it Bill Country. And thought that there is, and of course I came up many times too to do a lot of taping of the early members and the areas around here too, and Joni remembers that I think pretty well too. And in the decades of when Bill was very active of the 45 to 55 and his own, talking about emphysema, Bill's own emphysema was coming along by the about 54, 55, and his depressions, of course, were so, talking about that, was he made, you know, it's so interesting. We think of Bill as making a contribution in just one area, just in alcoholism. But he made a very, very effective contribution in the field of depression. And those where it had been going on, making it very difficult for him from 45 to 55. And I've always thought it is just remarkable about what that man accomplished in that busy, busy, busy decade. Between 45, I mean, putting AA on its feet and trying to initiate ideas that would help it keep going and thinking of the future, trying to get that in mind so that the members that would know what a road to take as time went on. Again, as I say, in the 40s, it was, people were all over the place. It was funny, clubhouses were causing troubles. There was a lot of gambling in the clubhouses, a lot of boy-girls things going on in the clubhouses. Wives were had to bear the burden of a lot of guilt or whatever. I know there was one instance in down south. I can't remember where it was. But the group wrote us complaining about the wives. They in their group. It seems that they were holding their meetings in about a 3-room little house or something, at the end of which was a kitchen, and where the men met, or the group met in the middle room. The wives met on this end. Now, when it came time and the wives were through with their meeting, they would go through the men's room over to the kitchen to get to the kitchen. And the men were complaining bitterly about this. Tell those wives they have not to come through our room. And what could we do? You know. But it was one of those things. It's one of these crazy things that was going on. Who was a member? What was the connection with other activities and other agencies? I mean, there was so much of it was a year when instead of bringing about unity, it often dealt with disunity. And I had so many things I wanted to include in the book, and I guess about 20 pages maybe I had explaining all this, and they cut it out. Maybe they thought I was not being too nice to the early members or something, I don't know. But the reason I wanted to explain what was happening, and as truthfully as I could, was that it was not Bill's fault or Dr. Bob's. Dr. Bob was, in Akron. Bill was going around the country trying to get his ideas accepted. And here was, the office didn't have any real good management. Bobby B. was a great, marvelous communicator. It's how thousands owe their lives to that lady. But she was no good businesswoman. And when Charlotte came as a second staff, or we called them secretaries, general secretaries in those days, she saw what was going on and was said, boy, something's got to be done here. And so she invited her assistant that had worked with her in her office before, And Marion came over and became the first office manager, and she began to straighten out things, put things on a good level. And that's when that era is when I came. At that time, Marion came in January 47. I came in the 3rd of March. And we became good friends, and then she retired a few years later, and just recently she died. And that was a very difficult thing for me to cope with, too, because we've been good friends all through those years, and she made a great contribution to that office. At the end of the 40s, they decided, because the trustees were hands-off, they were custodians, they considered themselves. They didn't want to get involved in the office and make decisions and say who should do what. And so there was really, it was very difficult. In fact, the two staffs were not invited to the trustee meetings even until much later. So it was a learning time of that, of AA, which is to talk about it and then explain that at the end of the 40s, they got together, I said they, I don't know who was they, I guess the trustees did, a general service committee of local members who would be responsible for the overseeing of the office and keeping charge of what else was going on and straightening things out, answering questions and that sort of thing. Out of which committee came two very good general managers for the future. And so things then began to stud on their feet and got going. And that's when the good things with general service. Finally, the conference was accepted, idea 51. That was started. Al-Anon was started in 51 by Lois. That era of 50, 49, 50, and 51 was a very, very important era in the whole history of the fellowship. The accomplishment, complete turnaround, and things got going upward. That's why I wanted to show what the difference was then between what had been happening and what the turnaround was. And it's remarkable. I call AA a miracle. That's why it's a miracle. It lasted. It was wonderful. I don't know. What time is it? Oh, hell. I got so many notes. Well, anyway, that's, I guess, a good point to stop on anyway. You don't have to know everything, right? And that's why my little book, the teensy weensy little book that it is, tells you practice. I mean, there's so much more. I could have written a big volume like that of personal anecdotes, people I knew, places I've been, what's been happening. And I wanted to get into a whole big thing about Bill and Lois, life with them, so to speak. But listen. God knows what's best, right? Yeah. So I guess that's it. Where's Peter?
All right.